This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, my name is Julian Ng. Is palm oil production good for the climate? We will try to get an answer today from Daryl Weber, who is outgoing CEO of the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil, or the RSPO, which runs a certification program for stakeholders in the palm oil industry. It has over 4,300 members consisting of palm oil producers, to the buyers, the financiers, and to civil society who represent the environment and the people. Dato' Daryl has helmed the RSPO for 8 years and doesn't intend to renew his contract, which ends on 16th January 2020. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Julian. It's very exciting to be here again. And I just mentioned, you know, this book ends my career in RSPO.
That's right.
My very first radio interview in Malaysia was with the Breakfast Grill in June 2011. And now, I hope,
I think it'll
be the last radio interview as CEO for RSPO in Malaysia.
Well, as we speak, the Aussie fires, Australian fires are raging around and outside of Sydney. And I think this raises a lot of awareness and urgency about climate change and human activity. This also brings up parallels with the haze that we experience in Malaysia and Indonesia. But there is a sense that there is no urgency in solving the haze problem because this problem has lasted for a few decades right now. And it's been rearing its head in ways that we don't like, for example, our health and our way of life. Is this something that the RSPO is taking seriously?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, it keeps us busy. I wish we didn't have to be so busy with regards to the haze because I would like to see a haze-free year, for example. But, you know, as you know, the world over is experiencing severe climate change. Places that didn't have fires before are burning. Greenland, Iceland, for example, they're all burning. Australia has black skies now. So we are in an era of great urgency. I think, you know, the writing is on the wall. The platform that you're standing on is burning. So we need to change quickly. Now, RSPO has been monitoring the fires ever since I took up the job. In fact, RSPO was created on the back of those fires in late 1990s. It started a conversation to leading towards the creation of RSPO since late 1990s. This year, we have satellite images. We track hotspots. This year, for example, we tracked 262,000 hotspots across the fire season. And we found 994 within the RSPO members' boundaries, which is not bad. You know, you can't avoid fires. If everywhere is on fire, you really can't avoid fires.
So a lot of this is blamed on the slash and burn techniques of some palm oil companies. Is that a fair comment?
I think it's somewhat an old narrative. What we see now is really a systems breakdown. Yeah, so in the old days, when there were early warnings that, you know, you should not develop on peat and, you know, if you drain the peat system, you will suffer the consequences later. This is what you see today, yeah? So even with more intense fire management, you will see the peat fires, you know, becoming worse, yeah? Longer times because the climate change, you have longer drought periods, more severe drought periods. So that causes serious problems. So today, I think in most parts of the world, expansion by large companies do not happen through slash and burn. In the past, definitely. Despite the denials in the past, for sure, they went about clearing land with fire. Yeah.
Now, RSPO is actually a certification body. Has certification resulted in better planting techniques?
Well, first and foremost, a lot of our members now, previously have avoided peatland for this very issue. And now we have a strict no peat policy, you know, regardless of depth. In the past, we just said deep peat, don't touch. Now, regardless of depth, do not enter into peat zones. We know, for example, through best management practices, and this is one statistic that I'm particularly proud of, we avoid last year emissions of 1.4 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, yeah? Which means we, you know, we took out about 300,000 cars from the roads, literally. Yeah. So that to me is a very useful indicator that having useful impacts on the ground. But I also hope that apart from being very proud of it, you know, the growers should be proud of this, the growers who achieved this. But tell the rest of their brothers and sisters who are in this industry to employ the same good practices and you know, register those calculations so that you can tell the world that we are doing our bit for climate change. Because you can. You can develop palm in a more, much more responsible way. But stay out of peat.
Now, four Malaysian companies have been implicated in the fires in the most recent haze. IOI, Sime Darby, TDM and KLK. And KLK is one of those who have admitted that the fire had broken out in one of their plantations. So RSPO said that they were going to probe whether this is true or not. Can you give us an update on that?
So there are a few levels of us checking into this. First, you know, we know within hours whether there's a hotspot within our members' concessions. And then we send out a message to them saying, please show us why is there a fire. Is there first, you know, tell us if there's really a fire. Second, tell us why there's a fire. And three, how are you going to put it out quickly? So it's, you know, it's beyond doubt that there will be fires when the whole landscape is on fire. It's beyond doubt that there will be fires on plantations, yeah, especially if you're sitting close or on a peat system. So what we monitor is actually how they put out those fires. So given that, you know, you're going to get fires, what we really want to see is how quickly do you put out those fires. And I'm happy to say that most, if not all of our members do put out those fires. Those that haven't, will be put through our complaint system, which we have an independent complaint system, not run by me, but by a group of panelists, independent panelists, and they will suffer the consequences, I guess.
So you're saying that it's okay to have some fire as long as you put it out after that?
No, it's not okay. But given that you will get fires in a landscape that is already on fire, as I said, there was 262,000 hotspots. So just like in California and Australia, right? You, no matter what effort you put to avoid your house being on fire, you will be on fire because there will be sparks in the air, right? So similarly, especially in peat systems where the fires travel underground, you, no matter how well you look after your unit, management unit, you will get fires because of sparks in the air or fires traveling underground, not by you. Most of these plantations really, they don't profit from the fires. Why? Because if you see the allegations, it's mostly on mature areas or productive areas. So why would they want to put it on fire on purpose, right? It doesn't make sense. But as I said, in the past, there's no denying this industry started off in many parts of the world with fires.
Now, this problem has been going on for decades now, and whenever it happens, it causes health problems, and it comes in the way of how we do things. Our way of life is being affected. Is the RSPO making recommendations to the government, and what sort of recommendations are you making?
Well, I think, thanks for bringing this up. I'm really happy to close out the year last year with us finally publishing the maps, boundary maps for our members in Malaysia. So one of the big concerns I had in 2013 and 2015 when the big fires were around, people were always, it's a very emotive issue, this haze, right? So Singapore gets affected, Indonesia gets affected, Malaysia gets affected, and inevitably there'll be finger pointing everywhere, not realizing that each one of these countries are linked to those fires, right? So, but a lot of times, facts are not there. So we don't know. You know, we say there's fires, people accuse this company and that company, but you don't really know where the fires are. So in 2015, we started putting some maps voluntarily from our members just to tell people, look, these are the maps, and you can monitor yourself, you know, whether there's fires on these concessions. So we then got all our members to submit those maps mandatorily, with the exception of Malaysia, for a few years. And then finally, I think this government agreed in 2019, to allow us to publish. So I'm very glad that happened. So first and foremost, I think the publication of the maps has really helped us monitor those members. And whilst I do not have concrete empirical evidence to say that this has helped reduce, I know deep within that it really has helped increase our members' efforts in managing those fires tremendously. Yeah, and I think the more transparent we can be about this, the better, because now the growers understand that the world is looking and it's very transparent, and they can pinpoint, you know, exactly whose plantations and where those fires are occurring.
So transparency is one level, but if you said that sometimes there are things that are beyond the controls of your members, the big plantation companies, what exactly can governments, the governments of Indonesia and Malaysia, do to actually solve these problems once and for all?
Well, many people think that, you know, some governments are not doing enough. Yeah, so Indonesia, a lot of people point to Indonesia. We forget that parts of Malaysia actually burn a lot, especially those on peat. Yeah. Now, so I would say that the Indonesian government has put in tremendous efforts in the last 2 years. Yeah, and I think because of those efforts, the haze is not as bad as it could have been. Yeah? But I think the challenge facing them is tremendous. Especially, we now know that the fires, most of the fires are not started by big companies, but started by small landowners. And that is going to be tough to tackle. Yeah? And because they're not organized, you don't know where they are. We are currently asking our members to go beyond their boundaries to help out small farmers. So instead of clearing up your land with fire during fire season, we are asking our members to help them clear the land for them, provided, of course, it's not forests and all that. So I think one way for government to do it is harness the abilities of the private sector to reach out, maybe incentivize even the private sector to do so, to reach out to the smallholders. But I do think that asking Indonesia alone to solve this is not practical. I think Malaysia and Singapore needs to offer some help too.
We're speaking to Dato' Darrel Weber, CEO of the Roundtable of Sustainable Palm Oil, on The Breakfast Grill today. Coming up next, we'll talk about the trade spat with the European Union on palm oil. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Dato' Darrel Weber, CEO of Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil, is on The Breakfast Grill this morning. And Dato' Darrel, we were talking about forests and forest fires, and that leads us into a discussion on deforestation. Now, the European Union has concluded that palm oil production is actually raising our forests, and they are phasing up palm oil use for biofuel over there. Where does the RSPO and even you personally stand on this?
Well, I think, firstly, we have to understand where does the government come up with these things, right? So a lot of people, there's all these conspiracy theories, which may or may not be true. But one thing I do know that's true is that based on research and based on my own experience, there are a lot of people in the EU who have an opinion about palm oil. The last report I read that something like 70% of people surveyed in the UK had an opinion about palm oil, and it's not good, right? So government's policies usually are a reflection of the sentiment of that country. Now, to be reactionary to the government policy is not going to reach the people you need to reach. And the people you need to reach are those 70% of people who have an impression of palm oil. Now, the RSPO has been very fortunate. We are keeping the doors open in many of these markets because we have ambassadors who are based in those countries who are sending the very complicated message about palm oil. It's not all bad. There are some bad actors like any industry, but there are some great work being done by great people. And I give you some examples. So the Chester Zoo is a huge champion for sustainable palm oil. So now they've convinced the whole Chester City to be a sustainable palm oil city, for example. And there are four more cities like that in the UK coming up to declare themselves sustainable palm oil cities. In the past, it would be no palm oil. Now they're saying, okay, we recognize that there are issues, but the solution to those issues is not to say no to palm oil. And that's the kind of conversation we need to do with EU member states EU member states. We really need to reach to those grassroots and help explain. And I don't think we're doing a good job. I don't think the industry or the industry spokespeople are doing a great job in this. And I think what we need to do is reach out to those people through champions who are already in there, credible ones, and you will see a slow change.
Well, what does your research say? Because you are monitoring, you have all the information, mm-hmm. and you have the clarity of transparency. Mm-hmm. Can you settle something for us? Is there or isn't there deforestation by palm oil companies?
Oh, yes, of course there is deforestation by palm oil. That's clear.
Is it bad? We're killing orangutans and we are destroying rainforests. Is that a bad situation?
Well,
how do you deal with that sort of argument?
So nobody really clears with the intention to kill an orangutan or whatever. A lot of it is, as I said, in this part of the world now, in Malaysia and Indonesia, since the RSPO has been formed, I think the big companies know better. In the past, the first thing you think about when you get a government permit or land title is, how quickly can I get a bulldozer and where do I find drivers to drive it? Today, most growers, the big boys and the middle-sized boys, the first thing they think about is their primary forest? Is there any important biodiversity and all that, right? So they have to think about that. And then they don't hire bulldozer drivers, they hire specialist consultants to do due diligence, to check and avoid all these important areas. So that's the big boys. Now, the big challenge is, you know, in the new frontiers of palm oil, where they don't really know about sustainable palm oil. It's just like, you know, Malaysia, Indonesia 20 years ago or 30 years ago, starting off, or even 50 years ago. They don't know better and they're clearing. And that's where we really have to race to get to those places. And those places have just as important habitats as Malaysia and Indonesia does. Unfortunately, even in the local press, you will see today, elephants shot 50 times. And then they have usually in the same article, they'll say a plantation, found in a plantation or connected to a plantation. And that really brings the reputation down.
But Dato, when you say that, when you actually admit that deforestation does happen mm-hmm. and it's caused by our plantation companies, mm-hmm. Then you are echoing the voice of the European Union that they're mm-hmm. stopping the use of palm oil for biofuel because of deforestation happening. Where is that alternative narrative that, for example, the our Malaysian policy minister, Theresa Koch, has that Love My Palm Oil campaign, right?
Yeah.
Because she thinks that it's not... I think the narrative there that there is no deforestation happening. But what is RSPO's defense to this deforestation since you are certifying sustainable planting?
So sustainable palm oil means no deforestation. Right. So when I said there's deforestation by the industry, it doesn't mean I said by the companies. So there are many smaller players who have no companies. As I said, research has shown that a lot of the deforestation today in Indonesia and mostly Indonesia are led by small farmers. Yeah, that's clear. That's enough research, third party research.
But that's not the average company in the industry.
Not the average company.
Because RSPO is represented by the big companies, right? The big boys.
Well, no, we've got...
Are the big boys deforesting right now?
We have more than, 143,000 smallholders certified, covering 300,000 right. hectares of land. So we've got small players and we've got mid-sized growers as well. It's not only the big boys. Many of the new frontiers are
the
not
big boys. The big boys are also driven by commercial reasons, right? They want to make profits and therefore that, is it fair to argue that that encourages them to expand their plantation land bank and therefore also resulting in some deforestation?
I think the big boys fully understand the financial risks they have going into forest areas today. Given the level of transparency that we have, given the market demands, even in countries that did not previously have those demands on sustainability, they understand that there is a cost that they cannot afford these days into going to forests. So that's very clear. There's enough business cases to show this. Those that do so undertake those risks at their peril. And we've seen enough examples.
Now, do you think that there is some politics involved in the European side? Because, I gather that rapeseed and soy and corn mm-hmm. have also destroyed the forest, but the EU seems to be turning a blind eye on that. And I've also spoken to Jean-Marc Roda, who is a French economist from CIRAD, and he says that palm oil is one of the highest yielding crop in the world, which automatically you know, it deserves an automatic membership into a sustainable crop. Yeah. So has the RSPO looked at palm oil in comparison with other crops?
So in all of our communications, yeah, we tell them, look, the answer to unsustainable development is sustainable development. The answer to unsustainable palm oil practices is sustainable palm oil. There's no such thing as a ban. We're saying, you know, and we work together with IUCN, for example, release a report that shows that, you know, banning palm oil is not smart for the planet, not smart for people. That's our message always, right? Now, you have to send that message to make it clear that relative to others, palm oil is good. Now, does not mean that there's no room for improvement for the palm sector. Does not mean that we cannot make the palm sector more sustainable. Yeah, all the other crops, as you said, have issues. Agreed. Why are the countries not picking up on these issues? That's for, I guess, for us to speculate. But what you can do, that's what the industry can do, is show their performance in a very transparent way, in a very credible way. And one way to do it is through RSPO certification.
And Dato, I've read some of your LinkedIn articles, mm-hmm, and you suggest some tools. A tool seem to be some tools to nudge people towards the right direction. But tools seem to be quite a mild word, because what we need could be radical reforms. And that's what Greta Thunberg is saying, right? She's scolding the world about not enough radical reforms. So what do you think is the end game that you want as far as population growth is concerned, and feeding the world, feeding the population growth? How can we have an appropriate end game for that?
Firstly, I got to thank Greta for waking me up in the last few months. So I said in my final speech at my last annual conference, her words haunted me. And her words being, how dare you? Because how dare us rob the future generations? So many times, I mean, even though I'm conscious about these issues, you tend to think that climate change is far away and you can leave it. The best thing you can do is, you know, have children who will be responsible and do better than you in the future. The reality is we don't have the time. We see many parts of the world burning today, and we as the public need to understand that we cannot push this off to our children, because we have 10 years to fix climate change. In that 10 years, us, this generation, have to bite the bullet and do something. And I think that reality, that realization is coming through more and more. More leaders will come to talk about this in this coming decade. And, you know, I think that's the best thing we can do. Realize that we can't push this off to our children. Our mess is not for our children to clean up.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning, and we wish you all the best to your next undertaking. And that was Dato Darryl Weber, outgoing CEO of the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil. I'm Julian Ng for The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.